appreciating all the wonderful weather that we're getting and that it's not inundating you and washing you down a hill or seeping up and flooding you or any of your loved ones. And I'm sure that if you have family far afield or friends far away, you may be receiving inquiries and concerns and saying, "Are you all right?" And you can trust that if this is their practice, that they're sending metta to us throughout the weather, just as we send metta when we are concerned about loved ones or anyone really at a distance. I remember my many years ago, my aunt lived her last decade or so in a trailer park in Fort Myers, Florida. So every time hurricane season came, I was just terrified for her. And it was many decades ago, and it was before I began studying Buddhism at Spirit Rock, but I already had my own practice, my own way of doing things. And I had something that when I discovered metta, when I was taught metta, I said, "Oh, I know what that is. That's just like what I do when I'm concerned about a loved one, and I send them this white light." And I had this little chant that I would send a white light all around, keep my loved one safe and sound. And I used to do this especially when I had teenage kids who were starting to drive, and my husband had a very long commute from Marin down to Milpitas every day. And so every time I would hear the garage door open, I would immediately click in, "White light all around, keep my baby safe and sound," whichever baby it was, one of my two kids or my husband. And there was that sense of relief. Okay, I've kind of handed it off. I've handed it off. I've done everything I can do. And hoping for the best. And so when I began to study Buddhism and began to learn about metta, I just assumed that that was kind of what metta was. But over the years of studying and practicing and then teaching, I've come to a very different relationship with metta. So I want to share a little bit about my journey with metta with you. So the time that I really, excuse me, the time that I really realized that metta was quite a different thing was when we were riding across the Richmond San Rafael Bridge, and I realized that we were riding along, and I hadn't done my white light metta kind of thing to the car. Oh no, So I wrapped it in white light, and then I said, "Oh, that feels a little selfish." So I expanded it, and I sent metta to the other cars on the bridge. And then I started realizing, well, why stop there? I mean, for goodness sakes, want everybody on the road to be safe. But then some other very logical part of me said, well, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. The statistical probabilities is somebody's got to have an accident, right? So somebody's got to be sacrificed here. But I had done enough awareness practice, excuse me, to realize that no, that's actually not true. The insurance industry doesn't even call them accidents anymore because they're not accidents. They're people not being present, people not paying attention, and then they crash into each other. That's how accidents happen. And so, if everybody was practicing awareness as they drive, practicing patience, practicing kindness, doing all this stuff that we do all the time that's our practice, then we could change the statistics completely. So there wouldn't have to be somebody sacrificed at the altar of statistics. So I expanded my practice, and it was on that bridge that I realized the true power of metta, that it just can go everywhere. But that wasn't the only transition that I had around it. A lot of the transition came sitting on Friday mornings out at Spirit Rock, and sometimes we would do metta, and of course, you probably all know, sometimes we do metta to difficult people. So to do practices of metta to difficult people, we would put George Bush and his group of cronies into the center of the circle, and we would send the metta. And because it seemed like pretty much unanimous group of people in that circle were not big fans, it was very challenging. It was very difficult. But that's the challenge we're given, to send metta to even the most difficult people. And my students, sometimes they say, I'm sorry. I just cannot send metta to this particular politician or to this particular person. But the reason that they feel that they can't is because there's a misunderstanding of what metta is. And part of that is because of the wording that we traditionally use. And so over the years, and I lead metta every single Thursday morning at Marin Insight Women's Sangha, and I end every meditation that I lead, I end it with an intensive metta practice. And the wording has changed and evolved over time, because sometimes students will call me on things and they'll say, wait a minute, you know, may I be happy? Well, yeah, you know, I mean, that's crazy. I'm not happy all the time, and I'm not going to be happy all the time. And that's just not logical. And they're absolutely right. Happiness is an emotion, and we have many emotions. So I came up with a different way of talking about it. So I want to lead you in what my traditional metta practice is, and then talk about how the wording changed and how those choices were made. So if you would like, please close your eyes and come back into a position, and I'll just lead you in a metta practice. So metta is infinite loving kindness, the limitless heart, and we always begin the series of blessings by blessing ourselves, because we cannot share what we haven't opened to, what we haven't received. So we begin, may I be well. Really opening to all the awareness of the systems and networks in the body, working in concert for healing, for nourishment, for regeneration. May I be well. May I be at ease. Really opening to that infinite sense of ease pouring through the body. Feel free to take a deep breath and relax and release from the exhale. Ah. May I be at ease. May my mind be peaceful. Really understanding the nature of peace, how spacious it is, how respectful it is. So even the tightest knot of fear-based thoughts and emotions feels seen, feels heard, feels respected, and feels enough spaciousness so it doesn't need to go into battle. Nothing to prove, nothing to defend. May my mind be peaceful. May I know the joy of being fully present in this moment, just as it is. Just as it is. So just sitting with that series of blessings. Opening and receiving, allowing that infinite loving kindness to flow through you, to fill you full to overflowing. Noticing perhaps any places of resistance. Great compassion there. A little extra loving kindness. And then because of the infinite nature of this loving kindness, quite naturally grows and glows and quite naturally wants to be shared. So bring to mind someone, whoever comes to mind, who is in particular need of loving kindness right now. And to them we say, may you be well. May you be at ease. May your mind be peaceful. May you know the joy of being fully present in this moment, just as it is. And then trusting that gift of metta has been received in just the way it's needed. And bring your focus back to this body, receptive, open, filled full to overflowing with metta, loving kindness. Noticing how it expands and grows beyond this body, beyond this sweet sangha, beyond the walls of our homes, out into the community, shining its radiant, loving light into even the darkest places. And it grows and it glows, encircling the whole planet in its open and loving embrace. And beyond and beyond and beyond. And we say, may all beings be well. May all beings be at ease. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings know the joy of being fully present in this moment, just as it is. So metta is really a foundational part of our practice. And to overlook it or forget about it is to really leave out something that is so powerful and so able to cultivate greater awareness, and also greater compassion and equanimity. I heard the other day someone saying that equanimity is emotional bypass. Equanimity is emotional bypass. Well, only if you skip over the first three foundational parts of the four Brahmaviharas. You don't just say, oh, I should have more equanimity, so I'm going to just practice being, I don't know what the verb is for equanimity, but that's not the way it works. It builds metta, karuna. It just builds, it grows, and it's a practice. And it makes such a difference in our lives. Whenever anyone comes to me and says they're having a problem with a relationship, I say, send metta. Silently send metta. Whenever you think about that person, send the metta. No matter how difficult they are, no matter how angry you are at them, send metta. First to yourself and then to them. And amazing things happen. Amazing things happen. Long lost relatives have been reunited through this simple practice. And the other person doesn't even know what's going on. So if they say, oh, that's so woo-woo and that's just like you, don't worry about it. They don't know you're doing it. So that's a really important part of my practice, and I think a really important part of the Buddha's message is to practice from that place. Kindness, but not just kindness being nice kindness, because it's a good thing to do and you want to be seen as a good person. Metta is infinite loving kindness. So you might have noticed as I was leading that practice that I had a very interesting wording for my last blessing, which was, may you know the joy of being fully present in this moment, just as it is. Now this replaced, may you be happy, because I kept being called on it. And so I found this to be much more true to what I think the intention of it is. And see how it sits with you, and feel free to use it for yourself if it sits well with you. But it may bring up, well, what's the difference? Joy, happiness. Well, there's a big difference. Happiness happy is conditional. I'm happy that this happened. I'm happy because something happened. But joy is cultivated. It bubbles up. Sometimes we just feel joy. We feel joy because we've been cultivating joy. We've been cultivating the ability to be present and to notice that we're alive. And that reminded me of that, the sutta about the turtle, the one-eyed turtle. Are any of you familiar with that? Well, I'll read it to you. So this is the Dutiyachikala Yuga Sutta. So the Buddha said, mendicants, suppose the earth was entirely covered with water, and a person threw a yoke with a single hole into it. The east wind wafts it west. The west wind wafts it east. The north wind wafts it south, and the south wind wafts it north. And there was a one-eyed turtle who popped up once every 100 years. What do you think, mendicants? Would that one-eyed turtle popping up once every 100 years still poke its neck through the hole in that yoke? One of the mendicants says, it's unlikely, sir. Well, yeah, it's really unlikely. Well, the Buddha says, that's how unlikely it is to get reborn as a human being. And that's how unlikely it is for a realized one to arise in the world, a perfected one, a fully awakened Buddha. And that's how unlikely it is for the teaching and training proclaimed by a realized one to shine in the world. And now, mendicants, you have been reborn as a human being. A realized one has arisen in the world, a perfected one, a fully awakened Buddha. And the teaching and training proclaimed by a realized one shines in the world. That's why you should practice meditation. So, and that's also why, when given the opportunity, as we are, that we should be open to the opportunity and the possibility of cultivating awareness and receptivity to the joy of being fully alive in this moment, just as it is. So whatever is going on, all the causes and conditions of life, yes, life is like this, and sometimes it's like this, and sometimes it's like this. And each of us can think of many moments throughout this day, throughout this week, when we go, ugh, gush, ah, oof, and we had something to complain about. But if we kind of remember that it's so unlikely for us to be here. Okay, so there's 8 billion of us, but it's still very, 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 very unlikely to be born as a human. So shouldn't we really be present for every moment to live it fully? I think so. And I think that when we do, I know that when we do, it makes all the difference in the world. And I practice it as best I can. And surely there are moments when I totally forget, as do we all. But then I start remembering, and the practice brings me home again and again and again. And I hope it does for you as well. So I want to open it up to any comments or questions. And then I actually have a poem that I can read that's kind of a meta poem I can read if we run out of things to talk about. But I know this group, and I know that you have things to say. Barbara or Bill, whichever of you pressed it.
Yeah, I just, you know, when you said that somebody could actually say that that equanimity is social bypass, That kind of, I find,
Emotional
emotional
bypass.
bypass.
Yeah.
It strikes me that this is where the concept of the near enemies is really helpful. Even though the Buddha didn't teach it, it's from the Visuddhimagga, it's still the near enemy of equanimity is apathy. And so what they're talking about isn't equanimity, it's apathy.
Exactly. That's an excellent addition to the conversation. Thank you. Yeah. Apathy and despair. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. And who else? Oh, okay. Oh, good. That's great. When the hand raises, it jumps to that corner. That's so cool. Okay. So Bowman Yeager.
Yeah, thanks, Stephanie. It was a really good talk, and I love the part of metta of may all beings know the joy of being in the present moment just as it is. And that's such a great addition to metta practice. I really enjoyed it, and the story of the one-eyed turtle. It's such an honor to be born as a human being, and I try to remember to take advantage of that and to practice my practice as much as I remember.
Exactly, which is the most any of us can do. Thank you. Thank you, Mary. Mary.
Maybe she can't hear us. Did you say my name?
I did twice.
Okay, sorry. I was glitching out, so my, I don't know what's going on. But
Okay.
one of the things that you talk reminded me of is our wonderful late teacher Wendy Palmer. I just remember her talking about when she was first practicing, and this is really true when you're first practicing insight practice. And like if the first time the first time you're on a retreat, sometimes that goes well. But then sometimes you're on a retreat and it's like you're God, is this what's going on in my head? And it's just like, oh my God, I'm judging, and I'm like, oh, and it's like horrible conversation. And it's like, and we need metta because it turns to karuna. Because you cannot sit with, at least I can't sometimes sit with myself with and pay attention if I can't have a kind heart. And that was one of the things she talked about, is that she would, she'd really listen and just get really concentrated. And it was just so hard. And then her teacher told her, like, if you want to be able to do the insight practice, you need to balance that with the metta. And I found that that for me is really true, especially if you're going to tell yourself, you're sitting and you're on your breath, and then next thing you know, you're planning what you're going to be doing next week. You come back and metta. Oh, honey, that's okay, And how are you talking to yourself? And I think that for me, that practice, the insight practice and the metta practice, need to sit like one on one shoulder and one on the other. Otherwise, it's untenable. There's no way I can keep the middle ground. So I think that's just, so important. And metta for me is very much that felt sense that you were talking about. You can just really feel that energetic experience, and that just softens everything. And you can just keep on practicing practice, which is what we do.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And when I first was started out at Spirit Rock, there were some teachers that, there were Western teachers, and the idea of metta wasn't always something they were comfortable with. And I had one teacher who said, yeah, I just metta, I just, I don't feel comfortable teaching it because I don't, we're just going to be very aware. And it was unfortunate because it is such an important part of the practice. But I'm sure by now they have come around because it's that way. But I think that as Westerners, many of us coming from traditions that have deities and prayer involved, and many of us may still do because we come to insight meditation as a sort of a psychological adjunct to our own religious practices, which is fine because I've heard of many people whose religious practices have been enhanced by the addition of insight meditation. So that's great. But for many, many people come to insight meditation because it isn't very religious. You know, on the spectrum of Buddhism, it's about as secular as you can get anymore, and you're into totally secular mindfulness practice. And so because of that, it attracts scientists and people who may be, this is a major generalization, but may be uncomfortable with things that are very emotional, dealing with emotions and thinking about metta. It might be a little too woo-woo. And certainly my white light all around probably came across as very woo-woo to some. But what happens when we let go of our judgments around all these things is we have this opportunity to practice in a much deeper way. And that's what begins to shift and let go, especially when we go on retreat and you can soften in and notice all those little resistances and all those little red alert buttons that get set off with judgments and opinions and not wanting to be judged by other people as being, I don't know what, but it's a real, it adds such sweetness, doesn't it, to it. But the thing that I wanted to mention was coming from the Western practices of prayer. At first, metta can seem like a prayer, like we're praying to something outside ourselves for something. There's this beseeching quality. And what does that do? That creates this sense of separation. That we know the three marks of existence, and one of them being anatta, no separate self. We can come home. We can really come home to understanding that when we're doing metta, we are not begging, we are not asking, we are not praying. We are opening. We are opening to this wonderful sense of interconnection, the power of this energy that we are a part of, the life flow of all life, and certainly not of just human life either. You know, I mean, the generosity of plants. I wanted to recommend, if you haven't read it, I'm sure many of you know Robin Wall Kimmerer, wonderful author. And she wrote an essay in Emergence magazine called The Service Berry, and it was about the gift economy. And I actually copied it so I could share it in the chat. So let me see if it's still in my copy thing. Yes, it is. Yay. So I will, do that. Okay. So yay. Okay. We removed chat completely from We removed chat completely from our song because we found it too distracting. But so I'm not used to chat. But I recommend that article to you just because it speaks so beautifully to the power of true generosity very special. And if you haven't read Braiding Sweetgrass, her wonderful book, I highly recommend it to you. Yeah, I see some of you have. Yeah. So what else? Anybody else have any thoughts about metta? Anything you want to share? Deborah or Vita, whichever, that's Deborah, okay.
I just wanted to say thank you for the meditation that you just gave us with metta, because I personally have eliminated the word happy from that, because I think to myself, I'm not sure what that means anymore. Uh-huh. When I'm peaceful, when I'm calm, when I'm at ease, when I can stop and take a breath and soften the muscles and release the tension in the neck, I notice my heart changes. And that is joyful or happy. I use the word content. It makes me content. So I really appreciated you talking about the use of the word happy and then changing that to what you changed it to. So I just thank you for that. And I did feel my body and my heart all softening when you were doing the metta practice with us just now.
Good.
Thank you.
It's so important for me to get feedback and to hear if it has value to people or if there are questions about it or, you know, I need that too. The feedback is very important. Vita.
Thank you. So I had a thought, and when I ever have a thought about it, sure, that somewhere it was in the teachings. But when you were talking, I think for the first time, when I am giving metta, I'm getting metta. Does that make sense? So it's like I'm having a difficult situation with a friend. And as you were talking, I was doing metta for her. Mm-hmm. And it sort of cleaned. I felt a clearing. I felt a metta. So I would appreciate any thoughts you had about that, because I'm not quite sure what I'm saying. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Well, so wonderful to use metta in difficult relationships, as I mentioned earlier. It's so powerful. It is really important to recognize that we need to always begin with ourselves, because we can't share what we don't have. But it's interesting that you say, by giving it to her, you also were receiving it, which to me means that more than just this single direct line, you were really accessing that infinite energy. And so it was of great benefit to you as well. So, but we don't want to skip over the giving ourselves metta. But if you were also feeling it, I think that's wonderful. That's great. So thank you. Yeah. Jan.
Yeah, I wanted to share something from the Venerable Ajahn Brahm. Mm-hmm. He was talking about metta as an engine, and I love his image. It might not work for everyone, and he said it doesn't, but he said you're out in the rain, and there's a little kitten, and it's soaking wet, and you pick up this little wet kitten, and you hold it cupped in your hand, and you say, I will take care of you. And he said it gets your metta engine kind of revved up. And so he was saying that he had people that are like, oh, I hate kittens. So he's, well, okay, well, maybe you love something. And this one really difficult person said, well, I have a plant I like. And he goes, okay, you hold the plant in your hand. I will take care of you. And you get your metta engine going, and then you turn it, like you're saying, toward yourself. It's going, and this wonderful feeling of care and love and concern, then you spread it out. And I've just never, I mean, his stories are wonderful. He's in Perth, Australia.
I have heard him talk before that wonderful things about the internet is that we can have teachers from everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes. And what you say reminds me that the very long extended metta practice, traditional metta practice, begins with ourselves. But sometimes it begins with the easiest person possible. So say a small child or an elder, someone with whom you have absolutely no problems. It's just so easy to send them metta. It's just so easy because they've never done you wrong and they're just cozy and cute and wonderful, and that does get the metta engine going, as his wording goes. But it's really to recognize how metta feels in the body. So once you know how metta feels in the body, then you think of a neutral person. So a neutral person is your mail carrier or your person at your checkout, at your grocery store. Of course, we have very personal relationships with our checkers at United and miss them when they retire. But so it's not quite so neutral, but some neutral person who you have no problems with, but you don't have any particular, deep affinity with. It's just perfectly nice person. And so you send metta to them, may they be well. And that's pretty easy to do because you don't wish them any harm. So why not wish them well? And then, of course, at a certain point, you do yourself. And sometimes that's a really difficult person to do, because you have so many judgments and harsh opinions and all this going on and a sense of, I don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. And so what I do when someone really says, I just can't give myself metta, I said, okay, remember, imagine all the people around the world who are sending metta right now. And they're sending metta to all beings. And you're a being. So they're sending metta to you, and that makes it a little easier. They go, oh, okay. Just that sense. And I keep coming home to this idea of it's a homecoming. It's a recognizing our intrinsic being at home in this body, in this moment, at this time, in this world, all in this together, co-creating whatever's going on, and metta makes it possible. It makes it possible to do that. So, and then of course we get to the difficult person. And that is really challenging for people for very obvious reasons. And changing the wording from, happy really helps, because happy is conditional. So if you think of a politician who would be happy if some bill passed that would make you very unhappy, then you don't want them to be happy. Because their happiness depends on them getting what they want. And you don't want them to get what you want, but you do want them to be well in body and mind, to be peaceful, to be at ease, and to know the joy of being fully present in this moment. Because what happens then? It drains them of the fear that is driving them to make decisions that go against the life-loving spirit that so many of us are embracing. So we do send metta to every kind of person, because all beings, when they're well, are much nicer and much wiser and much better behaved. So Barbara or Bill, whomever.
I really appreciate you looking at these words. I mean, the English words versus whatever the Pali words are. I know that I almost feel like I need to sort of be loose with the words, because words have a lot of connotation. And like even happy has a connotation of conditional, but also has a connotation of sort of being innocent, you know, kind of just happy. May you be happy. There's something very, at times I'd like to use that. Other times, I think the word sukha, you know, the
Bollywood, yeah,
that could come in very handy. And I sometimes have trouble with joy, because I come from a Christian tradition where you get clobbered with joy, you know, and yet joy sometimes has a depth that happiness doesn't have. So I really, it's the same thing with dukkha. I have some interesting, I know some people hate the word suffering for dukkha. Oh, I don't want to use that word. I like the word suffering. I tend to sort of like, there's something about me that's kind of 19th century, you know. So it's but it's just wonderful, I think, to sort of understand that words are really slippery and they leak. And to be able to choose them, and what you've done is a, and to be aware of that is really a good thing.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I've always been a writer, and I write poetry. I'm a published poet, and words are really important to me. I love to work with words, and words matter a lot. So I really do pay attention, and I have, I always have this picture of some, whoever was the original English translator from Pali and Sanskrit, you know, why am I taking their word for it, that that's what the actual word would be? There's so many words that are untranslatable in all languages. You think about the German language and words that we have no words for, some of their Schadenfreude. I mean, we have to come up with a series of words to explain what that means. But, and I'm sure the same is true with Pali and Sanskrit, because we're all from different cultures and, you know, we're limited. So it is an exploration, but the thing that keeps our practice, our pursuit and our exploration true is our practice. So, you know, we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And it is exactly that. It's because we are doing this practice on a regular basis that we can sense the truth of the Dharma when we hear it, when it arises, when we activate our own inner wisdom through it and our exploration. And we're not taking anything on faith. We're exploring it. We're checking out. As the Buddha said, you know, don't take my word for it. See for yourself. And that doesn't mean to not value the teachings, but to spend enough time with them so that they really rise up and ring their truth like the bell. So thank you, Barbara. Yeah. So we've got a few more minutes if somebody has one more comment to make. Otherwise, I can read this kind of long rambling poem, but and I'll see if in this light I can read it. Any other comments? Okay. So this is a poem that I don't remember what year I wrote it, but it was apparently in summer. And you may be familiar with the experience of, I kind of like talking about a hot summer night in the middle of this cold season that we're having, but it's called Metta at Midnight. Awake again, mulling over painful events and poor decisions. I know that relatively speaking, of course, I am lucky to have such paltry problems in a week when tornadoes, cyclones, and earthquakes have killed tens of thousands and left 5 million homeless. But I don't want to need the misery of others to make my life seem good. Still, the switch with which I beat myself temporarily loses its sting. But I am still awake, so I begin to send blessings. over the mountains and across the plains to flattened towns where suddenly small found objects mean so much and so little. May you be well. May you be at ease. I send blessings across the Pacific to families waiting and watching piles of shattered concrete slabs and twisted rebar for signs of life. May the ache of a Sichuan's mother's chest be eased. Under the rubble, a small pool of rainwater keeps a child alive until rescue comes. May arms open to receive those wandering aimlessly whose homes and worldly goods have crumpled into nothing. May the seeds of happiness already be planted amidst the wrenching pain. Blessings know no boundaries, so I am not surprised to find I am now sending them to those who live in war-torn communities where fear is a constant companion. May you find ease, may your heart know peace, and to those who see violence as a necessary evil, may your hearts be softened, may you sense your connection. And blessings fly to land stricken by drought, to those who sleep to forget their hunger, and to all people everywhere who are suffering pain in their body or mind, to those who have recently lost the one they love best, and those who have never had a love to lose, and those who are sleeping in cars, under bridges, in shelters, and those who have been abused, and those who have lost themselves, and oh my God, it just goes on and on, doesn't it? But as I breathe in the pain of the world and breathe out loving kindness, the hardened armor I carefully crafted to keep the endless misery of the world at bay becomes porous, allowing the blessings to pour through all the holes in a tidal exchange until there is nothing but blessing. So I send blessings to the leaders. May you sense your connection to all life and respond with wisdom. I send blessings to the ravaged earth. May you heal, and to its inhabitants, may you live in peace and know joy. I bring my blessings home to my own neighborhood on this hot night with windows and doors open. I feel how all of us are resting together, the birds, the lizards, the deer, the squirrels, the raccoons, the insects and the humans behind screens, snoring or lying awake, worrying or feeling a pain magnified by the night. May we all find ease and take comfort in knowing that there is someone, maybe many people, who, even though we are unknown to them, are sending us loving kindness even now. The threads of infinite blessings weave a dense, brilliant web, a hammock of light, and at last I rest. So that was written in May 2008. So thank you very much for your kind attention. And I send many blessings and deep gratitude to all of you. Thank you.